You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here, we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host. And with me for the second of a two-part interview is Pratichi Shaw. You'll want to hear the first interview as well, and I commend that one to you. And today we get to continue our conversation about culture, organizational culture, and why it's important to organizations and why it makes them more effective when they have that culture aligned with their strategy. Pratichi, welcome back for episode two.
Thank you.
So would it be fair to ask you to respond to this particular question about innovation? So if we wanted to have innovation in our organization, we really wanted to emphasize innovation. Are there certain cultural markers that you would expect to see in an organization that is highly innovative?
I think it depends on, and that's a typical consultant answer, right?
Right.
It depends.
No, that's a good answer.
But I do think it depends on what kind of innovation that we're talking about, right? So if we're talking about innovation, again, that because we are talking about service organizations, that also is inextricably tied with empathy, right? So understanding someone's situation and being able to innovate from that place versus innovating, but potentially coming up with a solution that doesn't fit the societal situation, right? Or doesn't fit the community. So I think we have to think about like, what is the kind of innovation? But I would say some of the markers would be a level of freedom and a level of coalition, right? So a level of coalescing around the mission. So, hey, I might approach my work differently, but at the end of the day that we know that we are here because we feel rock solid about supporting this particular mission. And that means, sure, at times I have the room to be creative, and at times understanding that there may have to be some protocols, if you will, to get us all back on the same page, right? So I would say there's flexibility. There is maybe even some empowering of entrepreneurship. Like, hey, go out there, find that solution, figure it out, and explicitly empowering people to do that. People, I think, talk about empowerment as if it's something that just kind of happens. But I think you have to explicitly say to people, yes, you are empowered to go figure out a solution to this. So I think it has to do with that. I think it has to do with also something we don't talk about a lot, which is experimentation and failure. You can't have innovation without people thinking it's okay to try something out and fail.
Yeah.
You know, not at the expense of the communities that we serve, but hey, let's try this on a small scale, or I tried it and it didn't work. But I now see a different way we could do this. So if we're not allowing experimentation and failure, then all that entrepreneurship and creativity isn't really going to go anywhere, because the first try isn't necessarily always going to be the one to get there.
Yeah. Well, I've specifically mentioned innovation because I think our sector should be about innovation. It should be about experimentation. It should be about embracing things that don't work and learning from them, because the problems that we're working on, the issues, the areas of focus are generally ones that haven't been resolved. We haven't addressed homelessness. We haven't addressed hunger. We haven't addressed poverty, certain diseases, obviously the organizations are working on, education, a whole host of things that nonprofit organizations work on every day haven't been fully addressed. And so we have to be innovative for that reason, but we also have to be innovative because circumstances under which we work are constantly changing. No one would have expected us to be doing the level of virtual work that we're doing now. But because of the pandemic, we had to innovate, we had to change, we had to shift. So I think that our sector has to be innovative to get its work done. So that's one of the reasons I mentioned that. But I'm also curious what happens now when leadership decides we want to be a certain thing. And how do you help an organization create a culture that enables that to occur? What are some of the techniques, I guess, or management roles, I guess, that they have to play in order to create the kind of culture that would want to match, that would match what they're trying to achieve organizationally? So if you haven't been innovative, for instance, and you now decide innovation is what we need to be, or we need to be more innovative, and, you know, the leadership agrees, how do we now go about creating a culture that supports it? We know the things that have to be done, but how do we maintain that? How do we nurture that? How do we get people understanding that that's important and that's what we need to do and that we're going to be that way?
Yeah, I think it's first figuring out where you are right now. Mm-hmm. It's understanding, like, do you feel creative? Do you feel innovative at work? What stands in your way? Do you feel like you are empowered to create solutions? I think it's first understanding, just put very, very simply, like, if it's innovation, then what are the things that people experience that are driving them towards being innovative? And what are the things that are completely holding them back? And once you have a sense of that, I think you can begin to kind of then pick it apart and address the things, right? So, oh, okay, cool. There are certain things that are working. It could be something very, very pragmatic, right? Like, hey, we have these Tuesday morning stand-up meetings. And because they're quick and because they're rapid fire and because they're stand-up, that sparks creativity, or that allows me to be creative versus a longer meeting that might be more listening and therefore doesn't allow creativity. Obviously, I'm making that up. I have, you know, it could be anything, but sometimes it's those smaller, very practical things. But I think understanding some sense of that, of kind of, so what's standing in our way and what's helping us be innovative is the first step. And then kind of saying, okay, so let's take the things that are working and build on them. And then let's try to mitigate the effects of the things that are not working. I mean, and again, that's pretty oversimplified. But I think what happens with culture is, because it's everything, people try to do everything, right? And they think, like, okay, let's do, you know, let's paint the walls a different color. And let's start using only electronic whiteboards to capture our ideas. Or right now, let's only use Jamboards and not use Google Docs or whatever, because they think it's about kind of those technique things, which certainly can play a role. But if you try to address everything, it's not, your efforts are going to be too dispersed to have any effect on anything, right? So we need to kind of think about, like, what's working, what's not, very simply put, and then let's try to address those.
Yeah. So Pratici, when you're talking to your clients, I'm sure you're mindful of just how difficult this is. And I'm certain that our listeners don't really appreciate, how could they, these inner workings of culture and how difficult it is to maintain in an organization, to build in an organization that is trying to achieve results. What do you say to the average person who doesn't know how difficult this is and how tough this is to get done inside of an organization?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think the organizations within the charitable sector are extraordinarily complex to lead, to contribute to as a staff person, to make run, in the sense that there's so many stakeholders, right? So you have the typical kind of parts of an organization. You have a staff, you have some, at pre-pandemic, you have some physicality maybe of a place, and you have a board, but the way that nonprofit leaders interact with their board is different. It is a much more ongoing nature of that relationship. There is also the aspect of interacting with a constituency There are community leaders. There are often political leaders at any level, local, state, national. There is interacting with the rules and regulations that cover your particular area or affect your particular area and those that govern the entire nonprofit sector. There are donors. There are philanthropies. If you're a nonprofit and you do receive philanthropic funds, there are philanthropies as well. So the idea of running this organization, while it can look like, hey, that looks like organizations I've seen in other sectors, there is so much more complexity and there is an intricacy of both relationship and environmental circumstances that have to be navigated. So I think as leaders, you're always kind of threading these needles, right? Plus you're building organizational culture, plus you're keeping a staff engaged, you're keeping a board engaged, you're keeping volunteers engaged while managing kind of these, in some ways, these multiple bottom lines, financial and otherwise. So it's incredibly complex and they deserve a ton of credit for being able to do it every single day. Not to mention rising to the occasion of what is happening in society at any given time.
Wow. Well, I know one of the things that you work on and organizations have been highly concerned about lately is, you know, racial reckoning and how organizations can be more focused on creating equitable workplaces that are more diverse and inclusive. You know, I suspect it's not really your role to tell an organization they should be doing these things, but I suspect you come across groups that say to you, Pratici, how do we do this? You know, what should we be doing? I know there are lots of organizations that I've encountered in the last year or so who are just wondering, you know, how do we do this? Have we done enough?
Yeah.
And it seems from having those conversations that organizations are more on a journey than an actual destination.
Right.
And so how are you advising your clients in this regard?
You know, it's going to sound remarkably not glamorous and not really kind of the what people think of as the heart of dealing with these kinds of things, which is still important. But I'm not one to say like, hey, let's rush into having a conversation. Let's get, you know, the entire team together and have a conversation about race. Because I'm not sure that that's necessarily the right place to start to shift the culture, because people may not be equipped. Yeah. People may not have the skills or the knowledge to have that conversation. And once you leave that conversation, you're still going back to the organization, right? Mm-hmm. So, or have we changed the systems to support whatever awareness or enlightenment may come out of that conversation, or the hurt, or any of the things that come out of that conversation? So I'm kind of a big believer instead in starting with what we said before about innovation too, right? Is starting with the understanding of where we are. So what is working? What is not? Do we understand how different people, different groups experience the organization, experience the culture, experience their ability to do their work or not do their work, right? Like their obstacles. I think first we start there and say, okay, so what is it that people are experiencing? And in particular, how are different groups experiencing our workplace, right? And even at the individual level, how are different individuals experiencing it? And then we kind of say, okay, so based on that, there are, what I would recommend is there are kind of three areas that you want to look at to really drive change, right? And they are the overall organizational piece. Like, so what are the systems that need to be different? What is a systemic change that we're going to create in this organization? The systems around how we hire, how we reward people, how we align our internal approach to racial equity, to inclusion, and our external work, right? So when we're serving our constituencies, it shouldn't look dramatically different than how we experience each other internally, because that creates all kinds of gaps and dissonance, and that messes everything up, right? So looking at all of those systems, and then looking at, so that's the macro level or the organization-wide level, right? And then you look at the individual level, because so many of these things happen at the individual behavior level, right? So if the systems are good, but everyone is acting in ways that are either microaggressions or that are not helping us be more inclusive, then there's still going to be a misalignment. So once you've looked at the macro, you have to look at the micro, and the micro in organizations tends to be the individual or behavioral level. So how do we change individual behaviors to make sure that we're being inclusive? How we manage, how we run meetings, which so mundane, right? But so important because we spend a ton of time in meetings. So how do we orient people to our organization? How do we bring them in to the organization? How do we communicate with each other? How do we collaborate with each other? So all of those behavioral aspects. And then the third piece supporting all of that is education, ongoing education. So not just about kind of the historical aspects, which I think have to be covered, but also the skill building aspects. The evolving nature of the field of study suggests that we need to kind of constantly stay in touch with what's being put out there. What do we need to understand about all aspects of inclusion and equity? So it's those things. It's first figuring out where you are, right? And then defining kind of what does inclusion look like for us and closing that gap. And then it's kind of looking at these three areas or three levels, that the organization-wide systemic change, the individual behavior change, and then the education to support both.
Yeah. I ask a lot of our guests on the show how they believe our sector can play a role in reducing the extreme polarization that we're seeing in our society as well. And I haven't really had a chance to ask sort of an organizational expert like yourself about how leaders manage this internally. You know, our organizations are just like our broader culture. You know, we're going to have people who believe in different things, right? And people who believe or think that our society should be heading in one direction, and people who think it should head in another direction. And yet we come together in a workplace with these divergent points of view, and sometimes they can bubble up into our conversations and be a bit distracting. How do leaders in organizations try to manage this? Do you have any clues or ideas that, you know, leaders can glean from your experience that would help us manage these kinds of circumstances that will invariably come up in organizations?
Yeah. I think in some ways in the charitable sector, we have what I will call kind of the luxury, in quotes, strongly in quotes, of the common mission, right? So how do we continue to anchor back to the mission? If you're there, you are likely there to support the mission. Now, that's not to take away from the fact that, you know, economically, you may need a job that happened to be here. So yes, that absolutely happens as well. To the extent that you had choice in being part of this organization, there is likely the belief that you believe in the mission. And certainly that would be ideal. And I hope so. And for those who are volunteers and for those who are board members, there is usually choice in that. So how do we then bring people back to focus on the mission? Most subsectors in the charitable world deal with missions that are impacted by things like equity, right? So that impacts poverty, it impacts education, it impacts hunger, it impacts environment, and is impacted by those things. So how do we then get everyone back to being focused on the mission and understanding, look, if you're here to contribute, this is how we're accomplishing the mission. And this is the way that we would want you to participate in helping us accomplish that, whether it's through a formal role via employment or a formal role through volunteerism or through a board membership, et cetera, and some of those more informal. But how do we support the mission? And I think it's really getting people focused back on that. Do I think that that's going to close all the gaps and be a cure-all? No, absolutely not. But I think, again, it is, you're here for a reason. And that reason is to address this mission. And this is how we choose to do that. This is what works for us. This is how we address the issue that we're addressing, and getting people focused on that.
Pratici, organizationally, I would think that if you want to volunteer at a place, you have some understanding of what the organization's mission is, what they are trying to accomplish. How do organizations go about effectively bringing volunteers and stakeholders into their broader culture? Because again, you know, when you have staff people, I guess is one thing, but volunteers are people who you don't really have much other than influence, hopefully, over. Is it different when you're managing volunteers as opposed to just staff people?
Yeah, I think it can be. I mean, exactly what you said, right? Because staff people tend to have ongoing contact.
Yeah.
There is a continuity there. There's regularity there that we can kind of leverage to experience the culture. If you're encountering the organization once a month, once every 3 months, maybe for an entire day, but every, you know, 3-4 months, every 6 months, every 6 weeks, it is going to be different. It's absolutely going to be different because of that intermittent contact. And so I think there's one big thing, which is to actively talk about the culture. Again, seemingly so mundane and kind of not very glamorous, but it is actually to talk about the culture and not just the culture of the organization. Again, like how are they experiencing it? This is what we stand for. This is what we seek to create for our employees. Are you experiencing that? But also the culture that they want to build among the group. Right. So if it's, for instance, a board or a volunteer group, how do you see this culture that we're trying to create manifesting itself for you all who meet once every 3 months, who see each other, you know, every so often? Maybe you're seeing each other, especially in the case of boards, primarily by Zoom.
Yeah.
Because in-person meetings aren't really logistically possible. So maybe you've always only seen each other on a screen. But what do you know about the culture and what can we share with you explicitly? Again, I'm really big into this notion of things being explicit. And then how do you want to create culture amongst this group? Like, what do you stand for in the support of this mission? You know, what resonates when you hear us describe the culture of the organization and the way that employees might experience it? What resonates for you about that? Like, oh, I love that you guys are doing that. Or really? I'm surprised to hear you say that. Why are you surprised? Oh, I didn't know that you guys were focusing on innovation that much. I experience you guys as pretty like protocol driven. I show up for my volunteer day. There's an agenda. I get my packet. It all seems really like systems and protocol driven. I didn't realize it was this big innovation thing. All right. So how can we make innovation show up for volunteers if that's, you know, a value that we want to carry over? So I think it is both of those questions. One, kind of how do you know about our culture and how do you experience it? And having that conversation. And then the second is, you know, and how do you want to create culture as an extension of our organization?
Let me ask you a personal question. Why do you think your business is thriving? It's hard to get a meeting with you. It's hard to get, I'm just like amazed we're able to get you on this podcast, all the work you have. Why is
that,
that
is incredibly
people
kind.
Seem to like want, they want to work with you. What is it you would say about, I mean, I have my own ideas, but I'm just curious why you think your clients are so eager to have you work with their teams.
I am blushing to the very tips of my hair. It's incredibly hard to answer the question. So without sounding like a complete jerk or being incredibly arrogant, something, a quality that I really, really, really don't like, what I would say is, look, For better or for worse, I'm kind of a one trick person or pony, even though I hate to put that on ponies. This is what I've done. I mean, this is literally what I have done for my entire professional career is the work of, you know, human resources, organizational development, and culture. So I think for those who like that level of depth, I think that is something that is maybe appealing. I think the other thing is because this is work that is centered around humans, there's a lot we can talk about as far as systems, etc. But you also heard me say a bunch of times, like, be explicit about this, be elastic, be flexible about this, because it's humans. Mm-hmm. It's actually human beings, you know, it's human beings that come together to make these organizations. And that means you have to have a lot of orientation towards relationship and being empathetic. And I certainly hope I bring that. I try to bring that. Sometimes I feel like I bring it too much. The empathy stays with me, and at night I'm pretty exhausted because I'm conscious of kind of carrying around the emotions of others. So I think that's the other thing. And I think this work needs both. Like you need to be able to get things done and have that kind of orientation towards getting things done. And you also have to be deeply people oriented.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, I'm hoping that I'm bringing both of those along with many decades, let's just say, of experience, more decades than I want to think about right at this moment. Well, but that's what I would dare say.
I'm sorry to have embarrassed you so, but those are
it's important things
to mention, because it kind of ties into maybe this as my final question for the interview, which is, what is a great client to you? What is the client that keeps you in your business, keeps you waking up every day saying, I really feel like I'm going to make an impact today working with this particular group of people on this particular thing? Are there specific elements that either you can draw from maybe a past experience that left you feeling really fulfilled, and one that you might want to share with others in our sector, both volunteers and organizational people as well, so that's the kind of organization that they create? Because we all have to show up for our constituents. You know, we have to create opportunities for them that leave them fulfilled, that leave them wanting more, that leave them feeling that they've accomplished something important or that they have a chance to. Well, what are those clients like?
Let me just first start by saying, and this is going to sound so cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway, because it is absolutely my truth. It has been, and will continue to be, just an utter and complete privilege to serve this sector. And it really does sound so kind of smushy-gushy and cliche. But I think that that part can't be overemphasized, because I am jazzed every day by these organizations that are literally changing lives and changing society. I'm only helping them with a tiny part of this, right? I mean, yeah, sure, we can say like culture does affect everything, but still it's still only a facet, right? I'm not helping them manage their finances or, you know, helping them with their policy and advocacy work. I'm not doing any of that. I'm just helping them with one thing. And so if I can do what I do, because again, there's the one thing that I do, if I can do what I can do to help them continue to make positive change in society, I mean, wow, that in and of itself is kind of amazing. And I'm also really conscious that we are a relationship-based sector. And so the relationships that kind of fuel that in and of themselves are kind of, they kind of knock me out. Like, I get to observe leaders like you doing amazing things, leading amazing organizations. So I'll say that. To get a little bit more specific, I would say the organizations that understand the power of culture, right? That really get, hey, you know what? We can be mindful and deliberate about our culture, and it will continue to yield really good things for us. Or we can just let it happen and take our chances, right? Like the people who get that difference, I think that is incredibly important. And I think for anyone, any part of the organization, the ability to have, again, like that level of empathy for constituents, for leaders who are making super tough decisions in super tough times, for staff who are juggling a gajillion things and maybe a gajillion more that we don't know about. You know, for donors who are literally giving of themselves at times when it's really hard to. So I would say holding on to that level of empathy while realizing the power of culture is ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That knocks me out.
Well, listen, I'm just so happy that you gave us your time today, Pratici. And I'll say this about you. What I've observed over the many years we've known each other is you're very rooted in pragmatism, but that pragmatism is always wrapped in warmth. And so to have an engagement with you always feels, you know, ruggedly necessary to accomplish something. We always feel like we're going to accomplish something and we're driven, but everything is wrapped in this blanket, you know, this warmth that makes us feel that every change we have to go through, every opportunity that seems challenging is always about doing it in a way that we can bring people along, and we care about how they're able to do it, and we're supporting them, and we're a team, and we're a family. So I just wanted to say that about you, and to also thank you again for joining us and for being my friend and for being my colleague in this long career that I'm having, and wishing you continued viability and success, which I know you will have in your business. As I said, we can't get you on the phone because you're so busy.
I'm afraid what's going to happen now that we put that out to the universe. But Art, I have to thank you. You are consistently extraordinarily supportive. And I really don't take that for granted, because I think, look, every person that you encounter in life, when they lift you up, it's a really big deal. It's a really big deal. That we have been friends for so long is amazing. That you are one of those leaders that lifts people up, that you are so consistent in your support and embarrassingly complimentary of me. I hope I earn it. I hope I earn that every single day. And I so much appreciate you. And just many thanks to you and the entire Wise Giving Alliance team for creating these moments to have real, authentic conversation.
Well, now I'm embarrassed. So to all of our guests, let me just thank you for listening to this edition of the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. If you haven't already, I hope you'll subscribe to our show. You can find us on all major podcast platforms. Thank you for listening.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. Send your comments and ideas to Nona@thusmarket.com. That's Nona@thusmarket.com. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's Terms of Service.